So, we begin a brand new perek. Perek Beis. The side of your page that's marked Yud Aleph. So, here, I think you... This one. There you go. Amru Chazal. Priyas Baal Chov Mitzvah. The sages say, paying back a creditor is a mitzvah. Okay? Paying back one's creditor, in other words, repaying a debt, is a mitzvah. So the first question we have to ask is, what mitzvah is it? Where in the Torah do we find any such mitzvah of paying back a creditor? And we're going to see a few different possibilities. If you take a look at footnote Aleph, so he first refers you to a Gemara in Erchin, a Gemara in Ksuvos, and Rashi on that Gemara in Ksuvos. So on your side sheet, I brought you the three sources. Source Aleph. Omer of Nachman, this is the Gemara in Erchin. Omer of Nachman, Meresha lohava mizdakikna lenichse yasmi. Omer of Nachman says, originally, when there was a man who owed money, and he passed away, and the assets went to his orphans, so originally, I would not go after their property in order to claim payment of the debt. Kevin Deshamana Lahadir Rav Huna Chavrin Mishmedira, but then I heard what our friend Rav Huna said in the name of Rav, Yasmi de Achli de Lo Did Hu, Lezlu Basar Shivkayu, very strong language, that may orphans who eat that which isn't theirs, may they go after the one who left them behind. Very obviously strong language. Mikan Veilech Mizdakikna. So he said, you know what? I better change. And he said, I'll claim it from the estate that they inherited.
Are we supposed to understand that wording though? Because may they, that which is not theirs. I don't see how that's connected to repaying a loan.
Well, if they inherit an estate on which there is a claim,
right,
and they don't pay back the claim, but instead they keep everything for themselves,
right,
they're eating that which is not their own.
But what's the second half of that claim?
So they should go after the one who left them behind, meaning their father who passed away.
But how's that to do with repaying the loan?
Because, in other words, there are anonymous orphans.
Right.
They inherited property,
right,
on which there is a claim.
Right.
They're not paying it.
Right.
So the statement is that because they are eating that which isn't theirs, because
yes,
they're not,
yes,
repaying it, that what happened to the father should happen to them.
Oh,
so Rav Nachman says, once I heard that, I said, I better make sure they pay. So therefore, I will go claim that out of the estate. That's the idea. Okay? So, the Gemara then wants to know, so what happened to change his mind? Right? Meikara, my time alone. What was the reason in the first place that he didn't make this, effort to claim the property out of the estate? What changed along the way? You had it? Okay, great. What changed along the way? We're in Source Aleph, in the side sheet. What we said so far is that there's a mitzvah of paying back a creditor, but we don't know where it comes from. We don't know what the source is. So, the Pesach Hoshin quotes this Gemara. Rav Nachman said, originally, I did not claim the property of orphans. For when there was a claim against the estate, I would not take it out of the estate. Then I heard this horrible curse said in the name of Rav, that if they eat that which isn't theirs, meaning that they're not repaying debts, then what happened to their father should happen to them. So then I changed my mind. At that point I said, okay, I better claim this. So the Gemara asks, Meikara, my time alone. What was he thinking in the first place when he didn't do this? When he didn't claim it out of the estate? Why wouldn't he have claimed it out of the estate? Isn't it right to pay back these debts? So Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa explains, because Priyas Baal Chov Mitzvah, V'yasmi Lo B'nei Me'evin Mitzvah Ninu. Rav Papa gives the answer, saying, because the payment of the debt was fundamentally the father's mitzvah, it's not their mitzvah. It's not their responsibility. That's the idea. Dan, can you do me a big favor? Could you pull me a Gemara Erchin, please, from over there? because there are two ways to take that line. I'm not sure which one is right, so I just wanted to see the Rashi there.
Do you are you comfortable asking questions as we go?
Yeah, of course.
Wait?
Of course.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. So is he saying then? Okay, it was the reason that he would have not thought he should go after the mitzvah was because the mitzvah of repaying alone was a mitzvah that belonged to the deceased father.
So that's exactly what I want to look at here. That's exactly what I want to look at in the Gemara. So I'm not answering that question yet.
Okay, so the question that I'm asking is, so therefore, does that indicate that, yes, he accepts that it is a mitzvah to repay the loan, but the question is there a transference from the father to a deceased anyone?
So the answer is yes and maybe. Yes to the first half. He agrees there is a mitzvah.
Right, because the father...
Right. Right. The question is... why he believes that it doesn't transfer here to the children, because I see two ways to take this line, and I don't remember which one is correct. One way to take this line is that the obligation doesn't transfer to the kids because they are minors. It could be we're talking about minors specifically. That's one possibility. The other way to read it is that it doesn't transfer to them because it was their father's mitzvah, it wasn't their mitzvah. So that's what I don't remember, and that's why I wanted to look it up.
The minors doesn't mean it's holy because there would be a trustee.
Why? There doesn't have to be there does not need to be an apotropos, no. When he says nizkakin or not nizkakin, that he would go in or wouldn't go in, effectively that means he wouldn't appoint somebody and they wouldn't do it. My gut is we'll go a couple of more lines in the Gemara because Rashi doesn't actually comment here on it. So we're going to go a couple of more lines and see where it brings us. Right now, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry, he does. I just didn't see it. Rashi does say, he says they're minors. That's the issue. Is that they are katan and they're minors. Therefore, it's not their mitzvah. Okay. So, Rav Huna, Breda of Yeshua, gives a different answer.
But then what? When they reached 18, they'd have to...
Then they would have to pay at that point, correct. So Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua gives a second answer. He says, Amar Tsrari Aspase. The reason why you wouldn't go into the estate to claim it from them is because for all you know, there's a safe deposit box somewhere where this fellow put aside something to pay the debt. And that's been identified as that from which the debt is going to be claimed. And the orphans don't know about it, and you'd be taking advantage of them if you now took it out of the estate. So the Gemara then asks, "My Beinayu, what's the difference between the two views as far as what the reason is not to pay out of the estate?" Well, Ika Beinayu B'Shachayev Modeh. One would be where the father admitted before he died that that he had not put anything aside to pay, so he made such a declaration. Or Inami, alternatively, Shamtuha Umeis Beshamte, if he had been excommunicated and he died in the excommunicated state, so the assumption is that means he didn't put anything aside. Because, bless you, had he put something aside, he would have told the Beis Din and they would have lifted the excommunication. The assumption is people don't want to live in an excommunicated in the state of excommunication. So the point from this is only to show you Rav Papa's view that repaying the debt is indeed a mitzvah. Take a look now at source B, please. Gemara in Ksuvos. Amar le Rav Kahana le Rav Papa. Rav Kahana says to Rav Papa, Lidi dach de amrit priyas bal chov mitzvah. According to you, that paying back the creditor is a mitzvah. Amar lo nechale di aved mitzvah mai. So what happens if someone says, okay, it's a mitzvah, but I don't want to do this mitzvah? Can we compel him to repay? So Amar Lei, Taneina, to which he replied, well, we've learned this. When do we say that we give somebody lashes if he violates a mitzvah? The mitzvah's lo sase, that's regarding prohibitions. aval the mitzvah saseh, but when you're dealing with an active mitzvah that he is refusing to perform, kagon she'omer lo aseh sukkah ve'eino oseh, such as if they tell him make a sukkah, and he says, "No, I'm not going to make a sukkah." Or take a lulav. They know Ose doesn't do it. Then makin oso agitate sein asho. We will strike him until he dies. In the case of the lashes, it's too late for him to conform. In the case of the losase, it's too late for him to conform. He broke the law already, so we'll have whatever the penalty is, and then we move on. But where he says, I stand firm in my refusal, so at every moment he is refusing. So if you hit him once, and he says, I'm still not going to do it, then he gets hit again, and he says, I'm still not going to do it, and so on. Now, this sounds very brutal, and this is not the, how does the line go? Do not try this at home. This is something for a Beis Din to carry out. There's a lot of discussion about who exactly is empowered to do this sort of thing. This isn't something we take lightly. The only reason I bring it is not to encourage people to hit other people, but rather to show that look at their conversation here. They give the example of repaying a debt. And so that is an example of a mitzvah saseh, an active mitzvah. So what is this mitzvah? Rashi, source Gimel, gives us our first shot at what the mitzvah is. He says, Priyas Balchov mitzvah, mitzvah alav lifroa chovo, he has a mitzvah to repay his debt, ul'ameis divarav, and to make his words true, meaning when he committed to repay. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, he init tzedek. The Torah says, you have to have honest weights and measures, and it lists a whole series of measures, and some of them are redundant. Because the Torah says, eifat tzedek, which is a volume measure, an eifat. And it also says, himit tzedek, which is also a volume measure. That these two different volume measures should be honest measures. So why does the Torah say hin after saying eifat? So Rashi gives you a drasha on the word hin, which is not his own. He didn't make it up. The Gemara says it elsewhere. It doesn't say it regarding paying debts. It says it regarding keeping your word in general. Hin tzedek means shehei hein shalchat tzedek v'lav shalchat tzedek. That when you say the word hein, yes, it should be honest. Your yes and your no should be honest. That's the way that Rashi takes it. You follow?
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about the reference to hein came up somewhere else.
Well, it comes up quite a bit. What he's saying, what Rashi's saying is, your obligation to repay your debts is really a function of your obligation to be honest. So when the Torah says you have to have a hin at tzedek, we understand that to mean your hein, your yes, should be tzedek. Therefore, you have a mitzvah of repaying. There is, of course, a weakness in using this as your source.
When was the yes?
The yes was said. You tell me, when was the yes said?
No, that's the weakness. You have to confirm.
Well, let's say you did. Michael is saying, when did you say yes? You said yes. In other words, you made a statement. When you borrowed the money, you said, and I'm going to pay you back by whatever date. But that's not my problem. My problem is, this is retroactive. In other words, I could have been saying hein et tzedek 100% at the time when I committed to repay. I borrowed the money on March 1st, saying I'm going to pay you on July 1st. And I meant it. But something happened in between, now I didn't repay. But my yes was honest. I meant to repay it. It wasn't a dishonest statement, it just turned out that I couldn't fulfill it. Possibly for circumstances beyond my control. So this is a hard route. Rashi's route for it is difficult. Take a look back in the Pesach Hoshe now, please, in Sivka and Aleph. And you'll see that that's not my question alone. Rabbi Yosef Engel asks that question. If you see, we quote Gemara Erechin Ksuvos. Here's Rashi, Ksuvos, Shehein, Chashrat, Tzedek. Begilyon Ashas, on the side of the page, in the Gemara, in the margins, you see this little commentary, Gilyon Ashas. So Hiksha, there he asked, Shebibaba Mitzia Dabim Tesamad Aleph, Okma Abaye Shlo Yadaber Echad Bepev Echad Belev. In the Gemara Bava Mitzio that Rashi is quoting with this line about the Hain being honest and the Lav being honest, Abaye understands that to mean that when you speak, you should not have one thought in your heart and express a different idea from your mouth. So he says, according to that, Lo Shayach Elakish Bishas Halva Lo Hayibadaku Lefroa. That only makes sense if, at the time that you originated the loan, you didn't intend to repay. But if you had full intent, this doesn't have relevance. The Gilyan Ashas is uncomfortable with that. Vikasa bin Minchas Chinuch Mitzvah Reish Nun Tes, Shehu Mide Oraisa. The Minchas Chinuch indeed writes that it is a biblical mitzvah. And then in parentheses he says, "Uludvarav b'cholmakom sh'amushu mechusar amana over alze." In the parentheses he notes that whenever the Gemara says that you have to do X, and if you don't, then you're acting in bad faith. That's all under this mitzvah of paying back the creditor. So under this banner that Rashi has, that's all version one of what the mitzvah is. Then he continues, after the parentheses on the fifth line in the footnote. Umidivrei sh'ar harishonim mashma sh'atam hum ishum shibuda de'oraisa v'alfinon mikra diyotzi elecha es ha'avot. An entirely different source. The Torah states regarding repayment of a debt that if somebody is not able to pay, then b'chutz ta'amod, you stand outside, you the creditor stand outside, and the debtor will bring you out the item that he owes you. Okay? B'chutz ta'amod v'ish asher atano shebo yotzi elecha et ha'avod ha'chutza. You stand outside, and the person who owes you the money should bring the item out to you. You don't go into his property. But the point is that this second idea is that it's not a function of being honest with your words, but that this pasuk, that the borrower will bring the avot out, this object out to you, that statement is actually not a description of an event, but rather it's an imperative. The borrower will be obligated to bring out to you this object. There is a biblical obligation, or biblical lien really, on his property to pay the debt. That's the second approach. So now it's not about the broad idea of be honest when you speak, but it's a very narrow point that there is a claim on his property and that it is enforceable by, it is stated in the Torah as something to be enforced. So that's a second explanation. And then we have a third explanation. Yes.
The one is about the relationship between the two, and the second one's about a remedy.
The second one is about
a remedy, really, not about.
Correct.
Interesting way of looking.
Yes.
To look at the remedy rather than you don't turn off and say, "Well, I'm owed this money." You just pursue your claim and go to the remedy.
Well, what's the difference between the two?
Well, conceptually, it's very different. You've got a remedy, but there's no talk about any right to recover them. The focus is on
the assumption is he wouldn't get to this point without a right to recover.
I see.
Yeah. We are now on the sixth line of the footnote. Footnote Allah? No, the footnote. Yeah. Okay? A few words into the line. Uva Marek Kohen Be'erchen Sham. In the Marek Kohen, which is a commentary you find, one of the tiny commentaries printed in the back of a standard Gemara. So the Marek Kohen in the Gemara in Erchen, Kasa B'Shem HaRadvaz, he quotes Radvaz, Rabbi David Ibn Avi Zimra, a major halachic authority in the 16th century, Sheb Kriyas Balcho Bechlal Mitzvah de Beheshiv Es Hagzela, that paying back a creditor comes under the mitzvah of giving back a stolen item. because after the debt is due, if I'm still holding the money, it is stolen. So therefore, we look at it as part of the mitzvah of repaying a theft. V'ayin b'shut ma'bit, he says, see the tshuvos of the ma'bit, the imri bina, the shei tshuva, the see all of these, the ein haroam, erech priyas balchov mitzvah. Now, the pisrei tshuva I brought for you here. If you take a look at source Dalid first, you need to see Dalid before you can understand the heading.
Is there a division between criminal law and civil? They're not.
So he's telling you it becomes a criminal case.
Oh, it is a criminal.
Because you didn't pay back, therefore it's criminal. The lines between criminal and civil are different in common law than they are in halakha. Claiming payment of a debt from somebody who has defaulted, I think in common law would not be viewed as criminal at all. But, yes. So take a look at source Hay, please. Source Dalit, sorry. Source Dalit is commenting on a Gemara which says, as is quoted in the beginning, mitzvah la yesomim lefroa chovavihen, that there's a mitzvah for orphans to pay the debt of their father. Why? Rashi explains, mishum kivod avihen, for the honor of the father. Because otherwise, people are going to see this property around and they're going to say, oh, that belonged to so-and-so who never paid back his debt. Ella, however, she'ein the basin lachofan al-kach, the basin, the court, will not compel them to repay. Delav mitzvah ha'asei mifureshes he. It's not an explicit mitzvah. In the Torah, kesuka u'kululav, like sukkah is, like lulav is. Ella mitzvah be'almat de'rabbanan. Rather, it is a mitzvah of the Rabbanan, which is a funny thing for him to say. Right? Given what we just said in Gimel, Hein Shochat Tzedek, although, I'm sorry, it's not a problem. Why is Dalet not contradicting Gimel? Think about it, it's straightforward. Why is Dalet not contradicting Gimel? Gimel. No. Gimel. Gimel was Rashi. Rashi, Gimel, right? Rashi and Gimel gave me a biblical source that was clear. But that was regarding the borrower's own words, that his word has to be honest. That doesn't translate to the orphans.
Okay, when there is no punishment.
Exactly.
The father's word should be honest.
Exactly. So it's simply a mitzvah of the Rabbanon that the kid should repay the debt. That's the idea. So take a look at Hay, the Pisrei Tshuva commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. He says, "V'ikol la'medok d'lechora nira de'eno ella asmachta." He says the Pisrei Tshuva writes regarding this hein tzedek idea that Rashi had quoted in Gimel. He says you could be medayek, you could analyze and say, "D'lechora nira de'eno ella asmachta." That pasuk is really not a biblical source at all. That pasuk is what we call an asmachta. It is it is linked to an idea, but it's not really a source for it. The pashtei dikrav midos who dechsev, because that pasuk about eifas tzedek, hin tzedek, and so on is really a statement about honest weights and measures. That's the literal context. V'chein nira midivrei Rashi beperek mishaya nasoi, and so it seems from Rashi. He quotes the Rashi we just saw in source Dalid. Be'ovda de katina de ara de yasmi, in a case involving a small piece of land that the orphans had, which I added in brackets, that they collected it from the orphans to pay the debt of their father. So he says, you know what? Even if you go beyond the mitzvah of the Yisomim back to the mitzvah of the father, it could still be a rabbinic mitzvah. And don't tell me about that pasuk, because that pasuk is an asmachta. And he continues to say, "V'shema hasam sha'ani da'iri biyasmi she'eno ela b'nei kvod avihem avalove gufei mitzvah de'orei sahavi." But then he goes back and says, maybe not, because maybe Rashi was only talking about the orphans, that it's derabanan for them, but that the core pasuk, as we suggested, is del reisa. So we go back and forth. So let me summarize what we've said. We have the first three possibilities to explain explain that it's Daraisa from various sources. We have Rashi in Source Dalet who says it's a Dirabanan. The Pisrei Tshuva quotes that to support the idea that it's a Dirabanan and that the Pasuk is only an Asmachta. But then he retracts and says, no, Rashi might only be saying that it's a Dirabanan as far as the orphans are concerned, but that it's a Daraisa for the father. Okay, so now going back into the Pisrei Choshen, now that we've seen the sources that he quotes, I'm jumping to the open space about 10 lines down with a big word ode. Okay. Od Amru, they also said, Shahalove ve'ino mishalem nikra rasha, that somebody who borrows and does not pay back is called wicked. This is a separate point. Aside from his obligation to pay back, if he doesn't, he's called wicked. Where do you get that from? Kemo shekasev, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, lo ve rasha ve'lo yishalem. The borrower is wicked and he doesn't pay back. Thank God. He says later on, we'll make the note that if it's due to circumstances beyond his control, then he's not called a Rasha. That says you. We have to see a Harachavav, don't we? That's all concludes one point. That brings us to our second point, which is the specific case of a loan that originated on Yom Tov. And the reason why a loan that originates on Yom Tov is unique is because you can't write it down. Right? You can't record the loan.
Why not just say any oral loan? Why limit it to your...
Because you can't. You're not allowed to write it down.
No, but you can have any oral loan.
So the question is, what's the level of the commitment involved when you have a debt that can't be written down?
Regardless of whether it's Yom Tov.
Correct. Well, no, not any oral loan. A Yom Tov loan, where everybody knows this isn't going to be recorded.
Right.
So take a look. The Shulchan Aruch writes in the laws of Yom Tov, Shalvas Yom Tov Nitna Litava, a loan extended on Yom Tov, is up for collection, meaning that you can demand repayment. In the parentheses, he quotes the Mishnah Brura, who says the same thing is true for a loan that originates on Shabbos. Sheim Hilvo, meaning Meichel Bi Yom Tov, so if you lend somebody food on Yom Tov, based in his kakin lo in misarev lifroa, if he refuses to pay back, based in his going into his property. Leafuke miman da'amar she'eno yachol ezvoa bedin shema yavo lichta b'yom tov. As opposed to the opposite view that says, no, you're not allowed to claim it, because you know what's going to happen if you're allowed to claim it? The result is that you're going to write things down. If I know that when I borrow food from you, Bezdin is going to come into my property to get it back, I'm going to insist that we record all the details. It's better for me, for my memory. It's better to make sure I don't get claimed for stuff that I didn't actually borrow. Right? It's a safeguard. So I might have said, Bezdin is not allowed to go into the property of the person who borrows on Yom Tov in order to keep them from writing things down. And he's saying it's not so. I'm sorry, the halakha that
I can't put together like a menu or a simple menu or
something. Only if it's in writing. In your head, you absolutely may. It's only that you can't look at your written list with the concern you might erase or change. Yeah. Umashma, he continues. Umashma, Shafil Lamandamar Eno Nitam Litava. It sounds like, he says, even according to the view that Bezdin cannot claim this debt, Chayav al Kopanim Me'atzmo Lifroa. He is still going to be obligated to pay. No one is going to entertain the idea that there's no obligation to pay. The only question is, can Bezdin demand it? And then he says, as a side note, Ubedin Isser Halva Bishabis Vyom Tov, Ayin Shulchan Aruch, Larakayim Simen Shin Zayin, Ishur Ksav Sofer. He says, as far as the prohibition against lending on Shabbos and Yom Tov, see the Shulchan Aruch. What's he talking about? So I brought it for you here on your sheet in Source Vav. Source Vav. Shulchan Aruch. ha-shoel davar me-chavero. If you borrow something from somebody, this is on Shabbos in context. Lo yomar lo halveini. Do not use the language of halveini. Halveini halva'a is the type of language we use with a normal financial loan, where you lend someone money. So he says, don't use that word. Why? Dimashmal is man meruba, ve'ikal amecha shema yomtov, shema yichtov. Because that's the type of language that's used with normal loans that are extended over long periods of time, and therefore we're worried that it's going to trigger him to write it down. Instead, you should use the language of hash ileni, which is used more frequently with lending someone an object, and it tends to be short term. Now, that's all well and good if you speak Hebrew. What if you speak in English? Then what? So he says, Ubalashon Laz, She'ein Chiluk Bein Alveni Lashileni, in some other language where there is no difference. You don't have a term you use for a short-term loan and a separate term for a long-term loan. So Rashi Yomar Tainli. Then what you have to say is give me. Because then it's clear that there's no repayment stipulated. And therefore he won't come to write it down. That's our fear, is that someone will come to write it down. Clear?
If there's no repayment stipulated, it's not a loan.
Correct. The answer is you do want it to be repaid, but we don't want you to use a language that's gonna mandate it.
The person's taking the money, is it?
Well, it's not money, first of all. It's food. This is Yom Tov or Shabbos. But the answer is you won't originate it if you don't feel like it. In other words, someone comes to me and says, I want this chicken. Give me. I say, no. I say, come eat at my table. I'm not giving you my chicken.
But wait a minute, but if you do agree, you're going to give them the chicken. You want them to think it's the money.
Right, so what you do is, the guy says to you, Michael, my food went bad. I need something. Do me a favor. Give me some chicken, please. I'll give you back.
Yeah.
As long as the language that's used does not mirror normal loans, so that you're not emphasizing the repayment such that someone's going to come to write it down. That's the key. Take a look at Zion, though. In Zion, this is laws of Yom Tov. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Halvas Yom Tov nitna litava badin. A loan extended on Yom Tov is up for collection in court. Source Ches, the Mishnah Brura comments. Nitna litava. Rotze lomar, this means to say, Shenizkakim lo bebezdin achar ha-yom tov in misarev lefroa, that after Yom Tov, if this guy refuses to pay, then we will indeed go to him in bezdin. Now look in the parentheses. V'aravusa hu, the novelty here is, Mishum de'igaman de'amar be'gemara de'svirale de'bedin eino yachol edvoa, ele be'no le'bein atzmo. It's because there is a view in the Gemara that you can only claim it privately, not via Bezdin. Din ha'yia nitan litava asya lemichtav. Because if it was up for claiming in Bezdin, then you might actually write up a document. Kamash malan delo kai malan achi. So it's teaching me we do not say that. Ela ki'idach man de'amar, we follow the other view. Din lo yachol litava lo yitan. And the reason why is because if he couldn't claim it in basin, you know what would happen? He wouldn't offer the loan at all. And the result is you won't have joy of Yom Tov. So what we're doing is we're making a concession. For the sake of Simchas Yom Tov, we're saying that the loan originated on Yom Tov can be claimed in a Beis Din. And we just ask you to carefully tailor your language to avoid causing someone to write this down. That's the idea. Okay. Now we get to a much bigger topic, which is a lot of fun. I don't think we're going to finish it today, but we're going to start it, and we'll see where we go. But this is a big, big topic. This is the issue of swearing to uphold or violate a mitzvah as it applies to the case of a borrower who swears that he's going to repay or swears that he's not going to repay. Okay, so that's where we're going with this. Take a look, please, back on the top of the page in the Pisrei Choshen, Se'if Beis. Okay, top of the page in the Pisrei Choshen. Hanishba lifroa chov. If a person swears that he's going to pay back a debt, yesh omrim shashavua chala. Some say that that oath is binding. Now, not only is he obligated to pay the debt, he's also obligated to fulfill his oath. Practical application of that coming in a moment. Aval anishba shelo lifroa, if he swears that he's not going to pay, ein hashvua kala. That oath is not effective, is not binding. V'dino kenishba levatel as a mitzvah. And the status is like somebody who swears that he's not going to do a mitzvah. If a person swears that he's not going to do a mitzvah, the oath is not binding because he already swore at Har Sinai that he is going to do the mitzvah. You can't take an oath to break the oath you took at Har Sinai. This passage is extremely problematic, what the Pesach Choshen just said. That's why you have 5 lines of Pesach Choshen on the page, and you have 30 lines of commentary. Because he's got to deal with what he just said. Because we have a principle, which we're going to visit in the Gemara momentarily, that says that if I swear to fulfill a mitzvah, it's not binding. And if I swear to violate a mitzvah, it's not binding. I can't swear either way because I already swore at Har Sinai. It's too late. So what are you doing telling me that we're splitting the difference here? We're saying that if you swear to pay, the oath is binding. If you swear not to pay, if you swear not to pay, the oath is not binding. Which is it? Is this a mitzvah, in which case neither one should be binding? Or is it not a mitzvah, in which case both oaths should be binding? That's the problem that the Pesach Choshen is going to have to solve with 4 different solutions, which are going to give us great insights. Yes.
So he has a mitzvah to pay the loan anyway. So what is he doing?
I'll tell you what. Let me hold off until we see source test, because that's the Gemara that we're going to have to see on this. But first, let's finish the paragraph. The af, he says, top line on page Yud Beis. Even within the view that says that if you swear to pay, the oath is in fact effective, nonetheless, let's say the following thing happens. He swears that he's going to pay back. And we're going to say that the oath is binding. Then, at some point, something happened to exempt him from having to pay. What could have happened? Kigon Shegia Shmita. The sabbatical year came along. Oh, Shemachalo Amalva, where the creditor forgave the loan. Now what does he do? From the mitzvah, he doesn't have a mitzvah to pay anymore. But he took an oath to pay. So he says, Nifter Gambeya Shavua. The oath is not an oath of, I'm going to give you X number of dollars. Rather, the oath is, I'm going to repay the debt. And in the event that there's no debt to repay anymore, the oath is gone. Clear?
Does their reading override the actual words?
Yes, apparently. I would think so, anyway. I would think so. Michael asks a very good question. What if the wording of his oath was not, I'm going to repay the debt, but rather the wording of his oath was, I'm going to pay you $200? Would it still go away if he ends up being exempt from paying the debt? I'm not actually so sure, actually. I'm not so sure of that. That requires a little bit of examination. But let's go back now to this idea about the oath to uphold or not to uphold the debt. First, we need to learn a term. We're back on page Yud Aleph in Se'if Katan Beis, footnote Beis. It is about halfway down. The Beis is the beginning of the line. So first, we need to learn a word. The word we need to learn is misadrin, or sidur. Sidur literally means arrangement. What it means in this context is the court going into a borrower's property and saying, here are items that we're going to leave with you because if we take them from you, you won't have a life. So So the basics of clothing, the basics of what he needs to make a living, that is what we are misadair for him. We arrange that he should keep those. Everything else is going to go pay the debt. It's a bankruptcy arrangement, essentially. So that's called Sidur. That's number one. Number two is, before we see this source, before we see the footnote, we need to look at source Tess on your sheets. This is the Gemara about swearing to fulfill or violate a mitzvah. Source number nine, source Tess. Tanu Rabbanon. The Gemara says, here is a brisa. Yachol nishba levatel es hamitzvah velo bitel. Yei chayav. I might think that if someone swears to violate a mitzvah, but then he doesn't violate the mitzvah, so I might think he would be liable for breaking his oath, right? A person swears that he's not going to keep kosher. He says he's going to eat treifel today. Or that's an action rather than maybe I don't want that. Maybe I want to be mevatel nasei. A person swears he's not going to pick up a lulav on Sukkos. And he's not a man of his word, he picks up a lulav. So now is he liable for breaking the oath? So the Gemara says, no. Tamad lomar, lahara oleitiv. When the Torah describes the swearing, it says, if somebody swears, lahara oleitiv, which literally is to harm or to do good. One negative, one positive. So he says, mahatava rishus, apara'a rishus. Just like the doing good is an option, so too the doing bad is an option. And what we mean by that, and I explained it in parentheses, is that an oath is only binding if the moment before you took the oath, you could have done the oath, what the oath says you're going to do, or you could have chosen to do the opposite without violating a law. That both the fulfillment of it and the negation of it were optional until he took the oath. That's what we require. Therefore, it sounds like if I take an oath to violate a mitzvah, my oath is not binding. Because that wasn't optional. I didn't have the choice, halachically, of doing that. Continuing after the brackets, on the second line in source test, Otsi nishba levatel es hamitzvah velo bitel, she'e patur. I will exclude then the person who swears to cancel a mitzvah and fails to do so, he keeps the mitzvah, shupatur, he's going to be exempt. Sorry? That's separate. Usher maybe because it's an oath in vain or whatever. That's a separate point. Yachol nishba lekayim es hamitzvah v'lo kiyem sheichayav. I might think, let's flip it now. A person who swears to do a mitzvah and then doesn't fulfill it. So I might say he is liable for breaking the oath. He swears he is going to pick up a lulav and he doesn't pick up a lulav. Is he liable for breaking his oath? Tamalomar, the Torah says, lahara ulehitiv, once again, mahara rishus, avatava rishus. Just like the option to break, to not do, has to be an option, so too the option to do has to be a legitimate option. It's not an option for him here. Why? Because he was already obligated to do it. It wasn't optional. It wasn't rishus. Otzi nishba l'kayim es hamitzvah v'lo kiyem shupatur. I will exclude the person who swore to fulfill the mitzvah and didn't do so. He is going to be exempt from liability. That's the idea. That's our starting point. Is a Gemara that seems to say an oath to fulfill a mitzvah, an oath to violate a mitzvah, these are not binding. And now I want to understand how you split it when it came to the Shavua here, the oath to repay or not to repay the debt. That's our big question, with all sorts of fascinating insights that come along with the four answers that he offers. So take a look at Sivka and Beis, back in the Pisnei Choshen. Sivka and Beis. This, he begins with a nafkamina for the person who swore. Nafkamina, literally that which emerges from. Meaning, let's pretend for a moment that the oath is binding when you swear to repay. Okay? How does that look any different from the case where you didn't swear? You're obligated to repay anyway. Doraisa, Dirabanan, Hin said, Kveshavas, Akzela, whatever pasuk you want, I'm obligated to repay anyway. How does my world look any different if I swore from where I did not swear? That's my question. So he gives you an application. The Beis Yosef quotes the word Chazei Atenufa to say, when we say that if someone swear that when we say that we go into the borrower's property and we arrange and say this stuff, we're not going to take this stuff to repay the debt, that's only kishalonishba. That's if he doesn't swear. This idea that we're going to protect the debtor is only if he doesn't swear to repay. Avalim nishba lifroa. But if he swears to repay, ein misadrilo, then we do not do this. We will not protect him at this point. Vehu atzmo chayev limkor komasha yesho lifroa lebal chov. Velo yavar al shkuaso. Vehviyo b'shuchanarach seif lamed. He says, the borrower is going to have to sell off all of his property in order to repay the debt. He will be obligated to repay the debt from everything he owns. When we said that we are misader, we arranged for him, that kind of protection is only in terms of paying a debt. But now he has two obligations, to pay a debt and to fulfill his oath. And when it comes to fulfilling the oath, it's not just an active mitzvah, it's also a prohibition. Don't violate your oath. And therefore he's got to give everything in order to avoid violating the oath. And therefore he will be obligated to sell off whatever he has in pursuit of fulfillment of his vow, of the oath that he took. Yes?
Is it also the person who didn't say the oath is less liable because they're held to be less responsible because maybe they didn't know that they were obligated?
Right, so it seems less...
Right.
The more accountable, the more you know?
Right, so not necessarily, no. It doesn't seem to be that kind of assessment. It's simply that he has entered into a different realm of obligation. And that's enough to do with him. Okay, so we've seen the difference between the person who swore and the person who didn't swear. At least one difference we've seen. It does seem to indicate, this Chazei Atenufa that Beis Yosef quotes, does seem to indicate that your oath is binding. Because otherwise, why are you having this conversation about Sidur or non-Sidur? So what he's going to have to deal with now is the question of why it should be binding, given what we saw in source tests, when the Gemara said that such oaths are not binding. So God willing, we will continue with that next week. As I emailed around, I think earlier today, God willing, we will have Shir next week, the 25th, but not the following Wednesday. Whatever is January 1st, we will not.